Congressman, Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today's Tuesday, June 17th, 2014, and this is Sally Baptist thanking you for tuning in to American Freedom Watch Radio with our host, Karen Schoen and John Estabrook. If you're able to call in and join the discussion, it's 347-857-4364. If you'd like to speak on the air, make sure you press the number 1 and so you get put in the host queue. Otherwise, you do not get in the host queue, and we do not put you on the air. But you can still listen. So on that note, I've got just a couple of things I'm going to mention, and then at the end of this, I have a question for John and Karen, and I really want their thoughts on it. But first thing, this is we're just 2.5 weeks away from Independence Day. And I have really been tired of listening to people say, Happy July 4th. Now, who goes around saying, Merry December 25th? Time to remember time to remember what July 4th is all about, because I don't think a lot of people know. I think most people think it's just another paid holiday. So
yeah.
Anybody that says July 4th to me, I say Independence Day, and I correct them. And I sent that email to Hobby Lobby because I went in their store recently, and all it says is Happy July 4th. And, you know, Hobby Lobby, of all places, ought to be remembering what Independence Day is. So I did send them a little email suggesting that they change that. Then, speaking of Independence Day, July 3rd, we're going to have Tom Pastore on the show, and he's a veteran. And he's going to give us the history of the abuse of the American veteran. It's America's greatest shame. And it's got to go over the history of, I mean, from the beginning of the American Revolutionary War, of what was promised to veterans and what ended up happening, and also how veterans have been used as the guinea pigs in the hospitals for different types of chemical warfare and everything else you can imagine. So what's happening today with the VA truly isn't new. Amazing information, and Karen and John, I'm going to be sending you his article that he wrote up. It's kind of lengthy because he goes into the history, talking about the Civil War, what was done. It's just very interesting and very depressing. It's America's greatest shame, and it's really true. Mm-hmm. One last announcement and then the question. Next week, June 25th at 9:30 a.m., the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority has their monthly board meeting. And so if you don't believe in regionalism, and we see what they're doing with transportation here in Central Florida, please try to join me at that meeting. I'm going to make it my goal to go to these meetings every month and start really getting into their face a little bit more. So if you want to join, please send me an email. It's AmericanStatesman@1791.com, and I would like to see you there. And now for the question. Question, and of course to get the show kicked off with Karen and John. Now, just this past weekend, I was talking to a fellow American patriot, and we were talking about what's happening in the election. We talked about Cantor getting bumped out of there and ousted, I should say, and that kind of stuff. And we said, and I'm saying, you know, what's going to happen here? When are they going to finally do something about impeaching Obama? After we see what's happening on the border, et cetera, et cetera. We had this discussion. And he said his prediction is, come November 2014, the Republicans are going to take over the Senate, they're going to maintain the House, and in 2015, by the month of March, is his prediction, by the month of March, they will have gone out with the articles of impeachment, have actually issued the articles of impeachment to impeach Obama. Now, with all that being said, Karen and John, you tell me, of course, Karen, you're going to go ahead and announce the show first, but please answer to me, do you think that's likely? I personally don't think the GOP has it in them to do it.
Personally, I believe it depends on who gets elected and who gets cantered. And if the right people get cantered and the good people or the American statesmen get elected, I could see that happening. But if we come back again with a House and Senate filled with Boehner and McConnell, I don't see it happening.
No.
So I would agree with you there. Yeah. If the fellow in Mississippi wins, his name just went right out of my head, Mick something.
McDonald.
If he wins, if the other people win, then the pressure will be strong enough to do that because these are the right people, and that's one of the reasons why they're getting elected. But if we bring back more Eric Cantors and more Steve Sutherlands in Florida, then we're not going to be able to do anything because, to me, both parties are the same, and they're not going anywhere. They're not making any waves.
Yeah, it's sadly
John,
one of
what
the,
do you think?
Well, I agree with you, Karen. I mean, everything will hinge on what happens in the election this year in November. But the one thing is the will of the people. You know, if the will of the people was such right now, I don't think, I mean, the clear evidence of the number of times that this president has broken the law and diverted Congress, there's ample evidence, ample proof, truth for his impeachment right now. But I think that what is lacking is the will of the people. Because if the people were loud enough and pushed hard enough, the evidence is there. The proof is there. You just have public opinion poll Republicans and Democrats who fear articles of impeachment. You know, they're looking out for what – they're already seeking what will happen in 2016. They don't want to be portrayed as the guys that couldn't get along or they've just gone after the first black president and the racism, everything that the media will portray. And trust me, if articles of impeachment were filed against Barack Obama, it would be a gut-wrenching situation for the country because I fear that the violence from individuals inside our society would probably shock folks, and it would be immediate, and that may be why they haven't done it. They know the feel for the undereducated voter, and they've got their finger on that pulse. I mean, that's what they live by. That's how they control their power.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you, and you are all listening to American Freedom Watch Radio, and we are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, every Tuesday from 8 till 10, and on Red State Talk Radio every Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. Please check redstatetalkradio.com for the new times, and tune in, listen, and share the show. This is your host, Karen Schoen, and I'm joined by my co-host, John Estabrooks, and our wonderful producer, Sally Baptist. And to continue the conversation, John, I believe you're right. I believe you're right, except it appears as though, and I don't trust the polls, but it does appear as though I think if Obama slips into the lower 30s, then you'll see the tide turning. As long as he is in the 40s and 50s, I don't think anything is going to happen for the reasons that you laid out, John. I think that's the problem. But there's always going to be 30% of the population that's going to vote for Obama no matter what. He could spit on them and it wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah.
And it's the 40% in the middle that is the sway. Sway is now dipping into the upper 30s. So if he lost his base and his percentages go below 32, 33 in that vicinity and lower, I think then maybe the Republicrats will find their voice.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess for the listeners, the one thing that everyone needs to understand, the evidence is there. The proof that the man is a lawbreaker, he has operated outside the Constitution, he has slapped this Congress in the face openly and public in their house. He stood in the well of our Congress and told them he did not need them or did not require one. That is not true. That's against the Constitution. Now, he does have power of executive orders, but not power to legislate. His actions with inside of his own legacy, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and the fact that he changed aspects and facets of the law without any congressional approval, without having to seek any advice of anyone. I mean, he's got Eric Holder, who is never going to take any legal action against him. But
no,
where is the Congress?
They'd have to impeach both of them. They should
sure.
impeach all.
Sure, and that's when you'll get a clear indication that it's going to happen, is when they impeach Eric Holder. I think that has to happen first.
Well, the House already impeached the House already set the wheels in motion for impeachment of Eric Holder.
That's right.
The problem is the Senate, which is
that's
there.
Right.
If there's a change in the Senate, then there is a shot of impeaching Eric Holder.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you, John. I think they are so...
They're cowards. If John and Karen are speeding down the highway and we break the law, and the state trooper, the local sheriff knows, well, there's John and Karen speeding down the highway. They're breaking the law. Does he wait and say, well, let me see what other citizens think about this. Let me find out what public opinion is about it. Or let me call the DA and see what, no. They will stop you immediately, and you're going to be confronted with having to deal with the justice system, not this president. He has taken lawless acts. He understands exactly what he's done, and it's not that it just happened yesterday. These are events, and he has broken the law. I think the number's up to where there are seven impeachable offenses against this president, and they date back 3 years. So now, if that being the case, you know, who is Barack Obama that he is above the law? So is he a tyrant king? You know, is he no better than the king that we fought for independence? And Sally, that was a great point. You know, it's not the 4th of July. It's Independence Day.
Right. That's right.
Now when we're, you know, now that we're living in a captured nation, I don't know. It's difficult for me to celebrate Independence Day. I mean, I respect and celebrate the effort of our forefathers and our founding fathers to take the action that they took, and with great respect, we should all honor that. But when you live underneath a tyrant king, it's difficult to celebrate independence when you know you're being held captive.
Well, and I'll tell you, one other thing, it just kind of bugs me. Maybe this is just me, and maybe, I don't know, I'm getting cranky in my old age or whatever, but there's something that just seems so weird or disgusting that when you go to buy these different Independence Day patriotic decorations, they all say made in communist China.
Yeah.
That is disgusting.
Something just seems weird about that to me.
Well, does it say communist China or just China, Sally? You know, isn't that the way that liberals have us start to accept socialism and to accept communists as our friends? When they fail to call them exactly what they are, it should be labeled on everything that comes out of China, communist red China. That's the proper terminology. That's who they are. They haven't shifted. They haven't changed their form of government. It's a communist red China. So why isn't that on the bottom of every teacup, you know, every shirt label that you buy, everything that you purchase? Why doesn't it say that? So at least you know who you're supporting. Because the ignorance in this nation, you know, oh, we get everything from China. No, we get everything from communist red China. We're in bed and indebted to communists. Well, no, it doesn't only make sense that all of the actions by the globalists in the United Nations are to turn every nation on the planet Earth into socialist doctrine, a socialist ideology. And that's exactly what we're confronted with. America is confronted and with accepting communism and socialism as a way of life. And it looks like a lot of people are doing quite well, and they're happy with it. I mean, they're not kicking back yet, not large numbers, you know. We're the small minority. But,
right.
You know,
well,
like I said last week, you know, there was only 3 or 4% of our founding fathers that fought for the independence of the nation.
That's true. And I think the turnaround is going to come when, as the interest rates start creeping up. But as long as they're printing money and pumping it into the stock market, that's the whole deal. They've got the 5%.
Karen, do you think our economy is being falsely stimulated and we're not, we don't know?
Oh, no, did I say that? Oh, I must have misspoke.
$45 billion a month, folks. And we did, what was the number? It was $85 billion. And we did that for 19 months, and then we woke up and we said, well, we're going to start to ease it and slow it. And we had some down market days when they went to $55 billion. And they said, okay, now they're not paying attention, and let's go ahead and ease it back, and now we're at $45 billion. Well, what's going to happen? Because let me ask, and every listener knows what pocketbook, and they know what's in their bank account. When you look at the trillions of dollars that have been pumped into the United States economy through all of the stimulus plan and this unvoted on stimulus that the Federal Reserve is carrying out now, because our Congress didn't vote on it. They voted on legislation that was too big to fail that gave power to the Federal Reserve to continue to pump this money in without having to seek congressional approval. So now that they don't need the Congress and they're able to do it, Is there any of our listeners that are middle-class, working American citizens? Tell me if you're seeing any of those trillions into your bank account. How much of it is coming into the American people?
So, John, I need a wheelbarrow. It's so big.
Yeah, yeah. And if we think back, you know, the first time we all heard stimulus, I guess it was under George H. Bush, and he had a stimulus package, but they actually sent out checks. Everyone got a check. It was a stimulus to the American people. And Billy Boy Clinton did the same thing. He had a little stimulus package, and he sent out checks. Every American got their check, you know, and those stimuluses worked because it reached the working people. It reached every sector of society, and people went and they spent their checks on things that they wanted to spend them on, and that's how we boosted the economy. And those stimuluses, okay, whether you like them or you don't, and I don't think we should have any stimulus packages. I believe a free market economy where you succeed or you fail on the merits of your work, on the merits of your product. If you've got a good product, you succeed. If you don't, you fail. But when you stop that stimulus, and now when they say they're stimulating the economy, look, there's one clear witness to where the money's going. It's going to Wall Street. Now, if you're invested in the stock market and mutual funds, okay, great. You're going to do well while they're pumping $45 billion a month into the economy. But what's going to happen to your investment the day they stop? And every company's got to go back. Either, you know, look at GM. You know, there's such a clear evidence that the only thing that they can do when they stop this stimulus is to start to increase interest rates.
The bad news is it's coming. It's around the corner because on all of the shows or the media that I heard today, the big deal is, oops, consumer prices are on the rise. And did you take a look at the price of beef and pork and chicken? That's where it's going to really hit the people the most, because they're going to be, and I forgot the other one, which is look at what's going on in the Middle East and what that's going to do to the price of oil.
Yeah.
So Americans are going to be feeling the crunch, and their little old stamps aren't going to cut it, and there's going to be major problems, and then maybe the Americans will feel the pain, and they'll feel that they should be doing something instead of what they're doing now, which is being bobblehead.
That's it. Well, let them have this last summer of love here, or whatever you want to call it, because I don't think that once this summer is over and we head back, because, you know, the Fed, this can't be an endless policy. So it has to come to an end. It's going to come to an end, and they're trying to break it to folks. And when it does, then, sure enough, we're going to feel the crunch, and we're starting to feel the crunch. They may not, when you look at the proper definition of inflation, The only thing that's lagging is the wages of the working class. The wages of the working class, unless you're working for government, now those wages have increased, and that is an indication. If you take that sector and add it into the total economy, and you look at government employees, government workers as a total, and how much their wages have increased, well, we already have all the indication of the inflation to come, but it's going to be far worse than any inflation we've ever seen in the past.
Oh, it is. It is. I just opened up my computer just to see what was happening, and here's three headlines. The price of meat, chicken, fish soars to an all-time high. That was one. The other is consumer prices rise sharply in May. That was number two. And number three is gas near six-year high. What we are experiencing today will seem like a bargain.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's some downside when inflation kicks in, okay, and then, and folks need to, and I, just from my grandparents, you know, I had a granddaddy that was pretty smart investor, and he managed his money, and he took care of his family. But one of the things he used to always sit around and tell his children, my grandmother and my mama, is, listen, whenever a commodity reaches an all-time high or an all-time low, position yourself in the opposite direction because it is going to come down, and that's where you can hedge and make your money, especially in the commodities market. You don't have to buy an entire
right.
contract. You can buy puts and calls, and you can wait and monitor, and you're not on the hook for big money. But all-time highs are very scary because there will be an immediate drop, and when that drop occurs, then think about what happens with inflation. People will not have the dollar bills. They're going to have to make choices and decisions. And when I can't afford to buy the beef and chicken at its all-time high price, and I start to eat dry beans and potatoes, you know, I mean, that's what's going to happen. Those commodities will decline because demand will not be there. This social pricing will come to an end with all of the advent of a hyperinflation in the United States of America.
I know, and the sad part is, since this is not taught in school anymore, people have no idea what even many people, I shouldn't say all the people, but many people have no idea what this feels like, what is going to happen, what they are at risk of. And it is, I believe, what they are looking for. And I don't think the people realize either that resolution, that joint resolution that they passed last year, the criminals, which was, let me think, H.J. 2847, that one says that they are giving Obama free reign to go and raid your IRAs and 401ks at 30% should interest be called or raised. Isn't that exciting?
Well, I mean,
so,
and it happened, and no one did a thing. There was no marches. There were no screams. There was no outrage by the American people because they do not understand money.
They don't understand. Right.
No.
That's the biggest problem that I have is the lack of understanding of math and numbers. And, you know, you can actually see it when you're talking to people. And you say something in a percent, and they look at you like you're crazy. You know, it's that blank stare of what is a percent.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a very, very scary thing. But we're going to be facing some serious bad times. Not only that, it's going to be happening as we're going into winter, just like you said, John. Think about the cold. Think about what's going to happen to the price of fuel. When people can't afford to either have fuel or eat or either or, as they did in Europe last year, many people, either food or fuel, that's what we're going to be facing. And then maybe, just maybe, turn the corner of the scream of the American people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's what we've said that for a number of years now, Karen. You know, when the American wake up, it will be when they feel the pain. And when you think about the people that have joined the Patriot movement, and you look at who they are, those are folks that feel the pain. But, you know, how many of them are veterans? You know, they know how they've been treated. They know how wrongly they have been treated. They know the lies that they have been told. And they were some of the first ones to jump up off the sofa and say, no more. It's got to stop, you know.
Isn't that what has to happen with all of us?
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Americans have to be Americans. That was what I said last night when I was talking to the group that I was the Tea Party group that invited me to speak. And I told them, I said, I am past the point of being politically correct. We have a disaster happening. Oh, and don't let the criminals in D.C. Don't let them get away with them saying, oh, my goodness, the border, we didn't know this was going to happen. B.S. They voted for continuing resolution in January 2014. And I remember when that resolution was passed, there were several articles saying HHS is now going to be spending marketing money, I think it was several hundred million dollars, to market food stamps in Mexico.
Yes.
When you invite people to come, what do you think they're going to do? Stay home?
No.
And all of a sudden they're saying, oh, my goodness, we now have a crisis. Where have we heard that before?
We've had that
crisis
for a long time. And, you know, the crisis on our southern border, you know, once Ronald Reagan declared amnesty, and I guess that was in the mid-'80s, and once he did that, you know, it just never did they go down and actually do what they were supposed to do and protect the border. But under this president, now it is wholesale with open arms, greeting, come to America, come receive whatever it is you need. Our government will support you and take care of your needs. Advertising.
Yep.
How shameful is that to enlarge the invasion?
Yep. And that's exactly what they have done. And now they want to put in the Enlist Act. This is why Eric Cantor got cancered, and that was the email that I just sent my representative, Steve Sutherland, and I hope you hear me, and I hope people send you this. You are a disappointment, a disgrace, and you should be cantered out of office. That's my new thing.
Yeah.
People should be cantered out of office. He is one of the co-signers of the Enlist Act. And for the folks that don't know what the Enlist Act is, they want to open our military to the criminal invaders that have come here so that they can have a pathway to citizenship. What part of will you not fire on an American don't they get? What part of Al-Qaeda and the new ISIS group have for years, it's been reported over and over and over again, for years, they take the kids, they are teaching them Spanish, they are shipping them to Venezuela. They did this when Chavez was alive. They shipped them to Venezuela, then they sent them to Guatemala, and they look just like Hispanic, and they are coming through our borders. Only there's one difference with the Al-Qaeda kids. They have been trained to put on those suicide vests and go sit in a bus of school children and blow themselves up and become martyrs.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that happening very shortly also. I believe there were two reports of that happening last week. One of them was a couple was killed in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
An illegal went to the man's car, killed the man and the two children in the back of the car. I mean, and then you have the drug lord saying, you better leave us alone or we'll come after you. What kind of stupidity is this? Oh, and here's another good one. The Mexican government just said that even though it's illegal to cross the border, the people shouldn't be called criminals.
Should we call them
illegal invaders?
I wonder how well that would work for them if we decided to take 20 million Americans and put them on the border and say, okay, go to Mexico. I wonder how well that would work for Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, when we started changing elections in Mexico.
They can't even let one
Marine.
American soldier out of a prison. What are they going to do with others? This is, what do they call that? A pot calling the kettle black.
Absolutely.
That's exactly
yep.
what's going on here.
Yep.
They're such unfortunate. John, how do we get them? I mean, I know we're doing everything we can. And I am very, very encouraged. I really am. I'm encouraged by Oklahoma that threw Common Core out of the ballpark, and South Carolina, Nikki Haley did the same thing. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we found out something very interesting today. Rick Scott has assigned the American Research Institute as the test, and he signed a seven-year, $700 million contract to test the children in Florida. You
wow.
would not believe who the head of the American Research Institute is. Well, his name is Dr. Schneider, and guess what? Dr. Schneider is on the committee in UNESCO for sustainable development. Isn't that wonderful? And the other interesting piece that I thought was so fantastic was that Jeb Bush's Foundation for Excellence in Education in Florida is now a partner with the American Research Institute. The circle is completed.
Yep. Well, and that's all you got to do, folks. And that's the ones I know we say that over and over again, because it is a solution not only to waking up yourself, but to be able to share knowledge with your neighbors and like-minded Americans. Always, when you see these large sums of money going into education, follow the money. Track where did the money come from. Whose pocket is it going into? And it always comes up with the same group of tyrants and criminals. And these
yep.
people should be tried for their crimes, and that's something for a later date when we seize power, and that's what has to happen. You know, that's yep. the all-important thing in 2014 and this election coming up is to put constitutional Americans, people that are going to stand on constitutional principles when we send them to Washington, but also in your local government, anywhere where there's an election. Elect like-minded, patriotic people who are willing to enforce and have honor. Put honor back into the office at every level. Any office where you have a voice and you have a vote, put honorable men and women into power, because that's the only way we stop any of this. That is the single solution, is we have to vote them out, power and the greed out of being an office holder, out of being a public servant. We have to establish that these people are our public servants. They work for us, and they have to serve us with honor. We demand that they be moral people, moral, like-minded Americans. And until we do that, we're sunk. We're going to end up having the same BS that we've got right now.
How is Mary Landrieu? Does she have an opponent? Please say yes.
Mary has an opponent named Colonel Rob Manus. He is a retired Air Force colonel. He was a fighter pilot. He flew his missions, and he's come home, and he's outraged. He's got a great constitutional message. He has become a more dynamic speaker. There was some, I think the first time that I had the opportunity to listen to him, Karen, was very early on, and he has just announced his candidacy. And I think he's received, he's a guy that's going to learn rapidly to keep his message in the context of his message on point, but he's not a politician.
Good.
And he suffered from not being that graceful politician who could dance around the issues. And I think of another person that was similar to that, and that was Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin was a politician, but she wasn't, I guess she wasn't foul and corrupted with the power. She went to the state house in Alaska with a purpose and an intent. And all people have to do is look at the thing that she gave back to the Alaskan citizens. Look at what happened under Sarah Palin's watch. But then when she got on the national stage and was confronted by the media, well, yeah, she wasn't the smooth-talking, I guess, Barack Obama, you know, because Barack Obama's a silver tongue pull. I mean, he'll make you believe that everything's going to be great, and your prosperity is linked to every other citizen, and he's going to make sure that everything goes your way. And, in fact, you know, the American people are seeing a huge decline in their wealth. I mean, the redistribution that he promised us is very well advanced, and it's every sector of the economy except for a super elite wealthy is suffering. They're losing their money. They're losing their foothold on the American dream. But Rob Manus is our guy. He's my guy. I openly support him. I have no problem with supporting him because I know what his background is. I know where he comes from, and I know what drove him in to seeking office, because he was a guy that would have been perfectly, as a retired colonel, you know, it's not that he needed the money. It was never about that. He just knew that somebody had to step up and become a voice for Louisiana. Because it became clear early on who the establishment Republican was going to be, and all you get is Mary Lott, you know, and that's just the way that is. So he threw his hat in the ring, and there's a couple other guys, but I think that we don't want to have the failure that took place in South Carolina that reelected Lindsey Graham, to where you've got so many independents running that you split all of the votes. To where the, you know, if they get 51%, they're in chewed back in, and that's what happened in South Carolina. They had six candidates running against Lindsey, and some of them garnered, you know, 8% here, 6% there. Well, you take that percentage away from who should be the strong candidate, and you find one strong candidate, and you get behind that American candidate who shares your principles and your values, and you support that guy. You know, that's what you have to do. We can't have...
That is a really good point, John, in elections. And people have to be wise about their elections as well, because that's a really age-old tactic, a strategy that is used very often. And whenever there's a weak candidate, but he is an incumbent favored or he is an establishment favored, because they've done the same thing in the presidential elections also. They throw 4, 5, 6, 8 conservative candidates, and all of a sudden the conservative candidates who we may want get lost in the shuffle, and the establishment candidate rises to the top because the conservative field gets too diluted. So please, people, don't play that game. If you're in an election and you feel that your election, and you have to be real with yourself, if there are other people running, 3 or 4 candidates running, and one of them is the incumbent, get together with the other guys. Drop out of the race. It's not the end of the world. What's the most important thing, having a real statesman as a candidate or arguing with other statesmen so that an establishment rhino gets elected?
Yeah.
And that's something that people have to grasp, and I know it's hard to do because we all think our egos get in the way, and that's what winds up, and we wind up on the losing end, and that's their game. That's what they want. They do it over and over and over again.
Yeah, and that's, I think that, you know, that's, it's a strategy that is well, Karl Rove understands that strategy. So, I mean, you know, if the Republicans want to dilute, and because, you know, Rove has a candidate in Louisiana, but that candidate has backed and would support the same kind of stuff that Mary Landrieu has supported. You know, and Rove may spew that he wants to unseat Mary Landrieu, but then when you look at behind the money and the RNC and all of their super PACs and where that money is being funneled to four different candidates, what is it that Rove really wants to do? He wants to dilute the overall popular vote. You know, when you get to the primary and the selection in the primary, Rove is liable to have four horses running in it, but he's only got one true guy that he wants to get in. And that's why he'll throw money in every direction so that each one of those smaller candidates can chip away 4%, 6%, 8%. And the bottom line is that they have no realistic chance of winning the seat. Rove knows that. But Rove can get it so diluted that his establishment candidate will rise to the top. And then what are we supposed to do as Louisiana citizens? And we know we can't tolerate another term of Mary Landrieu. So then what will be our alternative? And I have told people, you have none. At that state, whether it's, if it's not Colonel McManus, I can't stay at home. I have to go ahead and I have to support the Republican establishment candidate, and I would hate it. It would be distasteful, but it's a better than the Mary Landrieu alternative because we can shape him up, I hope.
Yeah, I am so tired of people telling me in Florida we have a two-way race. Well, no, we don't. We have a three-way race. Of course,
yeah.
They don't want to discuss the Libertarian candidate. And,
no.
Of course, the answer is, you know, oh, well, how could we allow so-and-so to win because we can't allow him to win? Well, folks, in Florida, we have two lousy candidates, one named Charlie Crist, the other named Rick Scott. And when my answer to people is voting for the lesser of two evils is still evil.
Yes.
And that's where we have to grow up, and we have to say to ourselves, we are sitting and complaining, and this is going on. What are we complaining about? What is the real issue? And is it going to be solved if we send the same people back? I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. And I
well,
think
that was one of the things. That was one of the great things about what Art's doing, Karen, because that is the way. When you get a candidate that has the strong principles and value of the American people, and you can get him help precinct by precinct, then they lose that setup election because that is exactly what it is. We have been relegated to picking the lesser of two evils in every sector of our government. You know, we do it with the president, we do it with senators, we do it with congressmen. And we have to stop. We have to say, no, I am going to stand with the principled candidate regardless of his party affiliation. I don't care who he's associated with, but you have to make that stand early. You can't allow that divided vote. You have to strongly support precinct by precinct the effort to put a strong, principled American in office.
Absolutely.
We know the evil. We know how they do it. I mean, we've watched it and we've witnessed it. We're living in it. We're living in their design. This is a powerhouse design of two married people who call themselves separate, but yet they're married at the hip, and that's the Republican and Democrat Party. They are the evil, and the power that they are is what has it done for America? You tell me. You know, and there's a lot of evidence that we can put good constitutional conservative Republicans in power, and they are standing and fighting for us, well, that's fine. I have no issue with that. And that's what I think Mr. Rose dearly hates and detests, is that we want power. American people want their government back, and he has had his power players in place for such a long period of time that they're unwilling to give us any power in government, and we're going to have to fight them. And I mean, it's a battle, and that's the way you have to look at it, and you got to confront it door to door. That's exactly how we can tell Mr. Rhodes, no more with your establishment Republicans. We're not going to have that. We're either going to have a Republican Party of Lincoln, Reagan, or bye-bye. You know, we will vote independent. We will vote libertarian. I'll vote for, you know, an American, you know. But that's the one thing we're trying to work within a rigged game. The game has been rigged. It's been rigged for decades. And now we're trying to change it and shift it. And all we can do it is by door to door, neighbor to neighbor, registering people to vote and hand delivering and telling them, look at this candidate. You know, who was the gentleman we had on that is Under Attack, the author of Under Attack? Larry.
Oh,
Nichols.
Larry.
Yeah,
yes.
Larry Nichols, you know, I thought that was a brilliant piece of advice. You know, put a marked ballot in the hand of your neighbor. If your neighbor is not a person that's participated in the political arena, they're not aware of who the candidates are, by all means, have enough nerve and have enough understanding that this is it. This is a battle. This is the fight. And sometimes we've got to do exactly what they do, because you can bet the unions give every union worker a marked ballot with the candidates that they want supported in every election across this nation. So what's wrong with an American doing that? What's wrong with you doing that? Making and printing a sample ballot with your name on it, that here's the candidate that we want you to select, and here's the sample ballot. Take this into the voting booth with you and select these candidates. What a great move. What a great move.
I think that is a fabulous, fabulous strategy. It really is. And you know, you're right, John. So sometimes the fastest way to beat your enemy is to copy your enemy. Copy
yes.
their plan. Copy their
yes.
idea, because the people
yep.
are used to that.
Yep.
You're not giving them something that they're not used to. They are used to being told what to do. That's a
Absolutely.
Problem for conservatives. We are not used
uh-huh.
to telling people what to do, because we believe that we don't care what you do as long as it doesn't affect what we do. And
yeah.
as long as it is moral, legal, et cetera, you can do whatever you want. So we have a bad habit of saying, here, go read about all these candidates and make a choice, without understanding that too often these people have no ability to make a choice.
Yeah.
And that's a big, tough thing to realize, that sometimes
yeah.
people are just incapable of making a choice. And as a result of that, you have to guide them. So there may be times when, yes, we may have to guide them. And this may be one of those times. And this election is that important. And we are absolutely getting, excuse me, we are absolutely reaching the spot where we should be in that position to be able to say, these are the bad guys. Because, and give them the because. They voted
yeah.
for this. They voted for that. They voted for whatever. Tell them. Make a list. We do not want that to be replicated. Are you happy with what has gone on? Well, if you're not happy, do you honestly think that the person that you're not happy with is going to change what you're not happy about?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, one of the fortunate things in Louisiana, and you're going to see it, the same thing in Florida, and you have to place value on the fact that the media elects a lot of politicians. The media is a huge assistance to the corruption and the foul nature of our politics. And in Louisiana right now, the Republican establishment Republican candidate is who Mary Landrieu is. You know, she's openly got negative ads running from her power packs against the establishment Republican. The establishment Republican and Karl Rove got negative ads running about Mary. But guess who? The single guy that neither one of them have even approached with any negativity and no negative publicity is Colonel Rob Maynard. Why? This man is an honorable man. don't think that it had been the last, because they've known he was going to run, and they knew he was going. And he's a – this is a pickup driving guy going door-to-door anywhere where – and he'll come anywhere where you'd like him to speak. He'll be – hey, ladies. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Was the earth
yeah.
moving?
There you go. Hey, we have spoken.
We have confirmed.
Well, you know, as I said, I am thrilled to be able to travel around the district, because I am realizing that the polls, especially Mr. Carl Rove, have no idea what the people are saying and what the people are interested in. And that is so encouraging. Whether I win or whether I lose, and I hope I win, and I'm thinking positive, so I will be in Tallahassee. But regardless, the ability to talk to the people and to open their eyes on many of the issues that they had questions about that nobody is answering them. And we went to a breakfast last week where they asked all of the candidates, you know, stand, blah, blah, blah. I happened to be speaking to a gentleman who was sitting at the table with one of my opponents. And he said that he volunteered this information. He said, by the time I got up from breakfast, my head was spinning. Because the candidate asked me what it was that, that he said I thought was wrong. And he said, I looked at him in the face and I said, if you get elected, I want a promise from you. So the guy looked at him, he says, okay, what's the promise? He said, I want you to listen and talk to us. And the candidate said, oh, well, you know, that's never going to happen.
Wow. Wow. Well, hey.
He's
as drastic as it is, it's probably the truth, because that must be one star son of gun, huh?
Yeah. Well, these are the people that go to Tallahassee just like they go to the state capitals of all of our states, and they are bombarded with their special interest friends, and they are told how to vote by their special interest friends, and they could care less about the people. And they seem to forget that it's the people that vote, but all they really care about is the money.
You know, what's that guy's background, the politician? What's his background, the man that's running
politician.
Against you? Okay, what is his last local office? What was he, a county commissioner or something?
He was our state representative.
Oh, so he's
very
there.
Strange
he knows
story
how foul
because he was a straight state representative in our district, and when they redistricted the district, he and the representative had the same district. So what he did, because he would have lost, is he said, "I will step aside and let her take over. Let Marty take over the seat, and I will take the seat next year."
Mm-hmm.
And Karen heard that, and I said, no, you won't.
Yeah, there you go.
No, you won't. But he was almost right, because what happened was I went around and I talked to as many people as I could find, and I said, please run for office. Please run. Well, you know, you get the list of excuses of why they can't run. And a couple of people were honest, and they said, why should we run? All of the money is going to go to Brad. Nothing is going to come to us. We're not going to get any support. And they were right. So he would have had no opponent. There was another Republican running, but there would have been no opponent.
You've got one thing on your side. You got more than one thing, but one huge thing, his arrogance.
Yes.
Because that's what defeated Eric Cantor. When you get a man that's arrogant, I will run and I will win, that's arrogance. He doesn't know that. I mean, he knows he has the power and the money behind him to do that, but he does not know the will of the people. And trust me, Karen, he's probably not knocking on a single door. He's sitting around with same fat buddies he is that he probably sat around with for the last dozen years. And you know, he knows he can rely on them for economic support. He can run a campaign based on ads, the media. Well, the heck
exactly.
With that. And then he spoke another big, arrogant statement, huh? Well, we're not going to listen to the people. How arrogant is that? And what citizen, knowing that, if a citizen knew that, how could you push the button for that sorry son of a gun?
Well, that was what the gentleman that was sitting with him said to me. He said, I don't know you. I will learn about you. I don't care. I will never vote for him. He said, I hope you're a good person because I'd like to vote for you, but I will check you out, which I was glad to hear. But he said, how could I vote for him after that statement?
Yeah.
He said, you're right.
Yeah.
The sad part is that you're the only one that he said it to. He should have said it to the whole room full of people because that's exactly
sure.
what they think.
Yeah.
That is exactly what they think, and that is exactly what they do. And
yeah.
the people
yeah.
in Florida screamed and screamed and screamed and said, do not give illegals the right to have in-state tuition, the same in-state tuition that goes to citizens. Nobody listened. They said, do not give illegals the ability to get a law license. Nobody listened. They said, get rid of Common Core. And the answer to that one is, we'll change the name.
Yeah.
So he's absolutely right. They don't listen. And the only way we're going to get anybody to listen to us is to change the dynamics. So,
elect one of us.
Yes. That's right.
Put Americans back in power. And that,
Americans back in power, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. Virginia's
that exactly
taking that
right.
step. You know, I mean, and we can look all across. There's great proof and evidence that some people are awake. And when you look at how they're successful in these campaigns, when you look at all of the money that was against the man of Virginia, when you look at the money that was against Ted Cruz in Texas and all of the establishment in Texas that lined up against Ted Cruz, but guess what Ted Cruz did? He ran a solid grassroots door-to-door campaign. And that is the answer. People want to meet their candidate. And look, when someone tells you, look, I'm going to vote for you, and you're at their doorstep, I think you can trust that, Karen. Everyone feels what we're feeling. Everyone knows that things are not right. Things have gone terribly wrong. And it's not just because of this administration. This administration has given us more hammers to prove and more truth to our statements. You know, we had the same arrogance under Bush. You know, we had the same arrogance and immoral standards under Bill Clinton. So we've known things were wrong in the American political game. We've known things were wrong on the federal government and the state government, local government levels. But now we've got a guy that's just given us one hammer, one scandal after another to where people are saying enough's enough. So if you're the first person to knock on their door, I think you've got a valid shot at getting it done. And what a great surprise it will be.
It certainly will be. Well, my district is huge, and what I'm going to do is have conference calls as soon as the primary is over. And I will invite people to come and talk to me and to bring their issues and challenges, and let's talk them out like real people instead of, you know, being hidden in the corner. Let's see what our problems are. Forget about the media. Forget about the money. Forget about the media. Forget about everything. Let's make a list of what works and a list of what doesn't work and do the things that work. And if they say get rid of that regulation doesn't work. Well, if Tallahassee doesn't want to listen, they can't stop us from doing it either because we have the Constitution on our side.
Yeah.
And I am hoping that as a result of that, the people will get to know who I am, and they will get to know that there isn't going to be any NRA or ABC or XYZ that's going to be donating $5,000 or $10,000 to me so that they feel they'll be able to walk in my office and say, I gave you money, so you have to vote for me. That's not going to happen. That
there
is not going to happen.
Yeah.
So we are down to 43 seats in Florida that are unopposed. So that's the bad news. The good news is last week it was 70. So 30 more people have stepped up to the plate. Folks, if you're in an area, it doesn't matter what state you're in, but if you're in an area where you have a returning candidate and there is no opposition, it is your job to find someone to run, if not yourself. And you don't have to be a seasoned politician to run for office. You have to be real, and you have to tell the truth. That's the qualification.
Isn't that a great American understanding of what it's supposed to be like? You know, tell the truth. Just simply
tell
us the truth. We're big folks.
Tell the people like
it is. We can accept the truth. And how many of us would love to see from Tallahassee, Baton Rouge, Washington, D.C., a politician come on the media and use the media to say, hey, let me tell you what they're doing. Let me explain to you what it is they're doing to you. I need your help. Will you contact these people that are going to do this to you? We don't get enough of that. We don't have politicians that are willing to share the truth with us, you know. They hide it, and they listen to all the, lobbyists. We've got some big illnesses inside the political game that have to be corrected, and hopefully we can start that march. You know, we did it in 2010 by taking the Congress, and if we can do that in 2014, recapture the Congress and take over the Senate, Donald, Harry Reid, start tossing these guys out.
That would be absolutely wonderful, and even if we have to do it, and it's not going to take one election cycle.
Don't
think that that's going to happen, folks. It's not going to take one election cycle. They've been doing this for about 100 years.
Yep.
It shouldn't take 100 years to clean it up, but one election cycle is not going to do it. So
can't happen without people voting, though.
That's right.
We have
people
to
have,
wait.
People have
vote.
A job, and that job
principles
is they've got to vote.
Yep.
Most important. But after the people get in office, they cannot go back to sleep. They have to be in contact with their representatives. There is no way anybody can represent you, whether they're in the Senate or the House. They cannot represent you if they don't know who you are and you don't talk to them and you don't tell them your issues.
Yeah. I don't know how many times I've heard that from local politics. You know, whenever I show up and I've got an issue, we never do hear that. I this is the first time hearing of it. Well, and I'm astounded often, but, you know, what is it that people should do? How do we, hey, and they're open to emails. Most of them have texts. And, you know, they've got Facebook pages. You know, and that's one thing I'd tell you, Karen, when you win office, make sure that you do that, you know. Use the power of the Internet, the power of all of the technology that we have, and really have an enlightened, you know, share with your voter base, your constituent, and seek their opinion, seek their answers, because there's nothing more powerful. There was a congressman that we had, and I guess he got tired of it. I mean, he's a guy that said, I can't do anything in Washington. I'm wasting my time, and he came home. And it was great at the time, you know, it was difficult for us. But he was a guy that did that. Every major piece of legislation during his tenure, you would get a simple yes-no ballot, and here, if you got any statements to make, fill it out, and it was postmarked, and you could mail it back to him. And he would tell you the results of everything that he sent out. We got it every quarter. Here's the way you wanted me to vote. Here's the way I voted. I'm voting your will. Now, how powerful was that? But
that is,
he was also
that
a guy
is incredible.
Well,
that is absolutely incredible, and that's exactly the way it should be.
Yes. Yes.
I told the constituents in my area that I intend to have conference calls.
Mm-hmm.
I intend, as soon as session starts, to have, I'll start it before session, have weekly conference calls. This bill is coming up. This is what we want. What is it that you want me to do? This is the explanation of the bill. How would you like it to be voted upon? That's the way a representative should represent their people.
Absolutely.
And when we find more of those, we will be able to say we're taking back our country. But you know what,
yeah.
John? It's up to the American people.
Yeah.
It really, really is. Because if they go back to sleep, which is what I'm afraid of,
I think it's going to get so bad that they're going to wake up, and they'll remain awake until they get it corrected. Huh? Because what's coming is not going to be pretty. I don't know how to. There is not a single economist that I've had a conversation with that does not have the great understanding that you and I have shared so many times with our listeners. Inflation is coming. Inflation will erode your wealth. And the type of inflation that is coming has never, never occurred in America like it's going to occur. The great understanding of what hyperinflation looks like is something every American citizen ought to take the time to learn and understand, so that, number one, you can protect yourself. Yeah, that's a big deal. But when that does occur, Karen, I don't think people go back to sleep. I don't think people go back to sleep ever again.
I hope not. I really do. And that really comes from the education. So
yes.
If you are in a state that has Common Core,
it
or any resemblance of Common Core, or any other name that you want to call it, when they start taking out the textbooks and burning them, this is what went on in one of the districts in Florida, not mine, but a different district. They took the textbooks out of the school and started to burn them. They told the teachers and the parents they could not have those textbooks. Well, who the heck paid for them?
Yeah. Yep.
How dare you burn the stuff
that
I paid
for?
So we've been telling parents all over the country, anytime your school says they are getting rid of textbooks, go to school and get those books. Even if you just hold them aside to have a comparison of what your child is learning as to what the truth is. Because even some of the textbooks in school are not wonderful, but they certainly aren't as bad as what's coming up.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's one of the things that I started doing early on, and I formed the Liberty Library for my local Tea Party group. But then I purchased books, and when I purchase a fact-filled book on history, I don't buy one copy. Sometimes I buy as many as 5-10 copies, and I've got them in plastic storage totes because I think there will become a time, whether it's underground or whatever it looks like, that there will not be people won't be able to get these fact-filled books, The Making of America, The 5,000-Year Leap. Those are books that every child in school, every child in every school across this nation ought to have an understanding of The Making of America. If you understood those principles, well, then you'd be secure in understanding what your civic duty is, that you have civic duties that you must perform. And Americans today are not performing their civic duties, not 100%. And that's the thing. When we become a nation to where 100% of the people exercise their civic duties, then, we wouldn't have these voter turnouts of 30-35% to where the worst of the two evils gets elected. We would be seeking out, principled candidates. I don't know, but books, we better grab them while we can and protect them and so that we can pass them on.
Do you remember when we had Bill Federer on, who's, by the way, going to come back, And he said that the democracy was made up of different components. And they took a component from the Athens democracy and from the Greek democracy and from the Roman democracy and from the Magna Carta. The one that stuck in my head was from Athens, where it was a requirement that at least 1 hour every day the people would gather in the town square and had to talk about politics.
Uh-huh.
Remember that?
Yeah, and think back to our founding. You know, there was a town crier in every, you know, and I don't have to go back that far in my mind. In growing up in rural Oklahoma and going through and into the small towns in rural Oklahoma, and there's always a town hall, but there was always a city square. And that's where you saw all your older, you know, citizens and people shared those conversations. And it was acceptable. And not until the late 60s, you know, and in the 70s, when we started to say, oh, no, never talk about politics or religion, never talk about politics or religion. Well, that was not the case. That was not the case of our founding. That was the forum, was in the town square. When you had something to talk about in regards to politics or religion and you were firm in your belief, you went into the town square and shared your thoughts with the people in your city. And we can get back to that age. I mean, it's not that difficult. We have a better tool than they would ever have because we've got power of the Internet. We can reach a lot of people. You know, you send me something and say, hey, John, I need to make this go viral. I need to get this out into people's hands. Well, you know, that's okay, Karen. You got me. Send it to me, and I'm going to share that. And so we have an easier access where we don't actually have to physically be in, because for myself, it's difficult, you know, working offshore and being on a drilling rig. There's so many times people think, well, how do you get all this stuff put out if you're on a drilling rig? Well, I've got an Internet connection, and I use it. You know, and what's really good about there is I've got 12 hours of off time to where I can read and where I can get online and I can share messages. So we've got the tools. We just need to learn how to use them, and we have to make our politicians use them to stay in touch with us as constituents, but then participate as they ask us. When they make a request, look, I need you to contact Senator Bro. I need you to contact Senator John. Well, contact them. Contact them. Get on the phone. Send them an email, because there's not a state in this union to where you can't pull up the state legislature on the Internet and get every congressman and every state senator's email address. Not one state in the union. It's available to every American citizen. And I can send a representative in Florida. If he really ticks me off and he's got something going on and Karen says, hey, John, we need to find people to, you know, contact this guy, or there's something that maybe you could share with him, information about the energy policy that we wrote, well, I don't have any problem at all getting his email address. None at all. It's easy. Easy peasy. Click of a few buttons. So we just have to exercise them, huh? I have to be willing to click the buttons, and I also have to be willing to share truth. Find the information, do the homework, and say, here you go. Let me share with you the way the founders designed this and why they designed it this way. You know, what was it about Athens that they wanted us to understand and take with us throughout our entirety? And that's what the things that we're really failing at. We don't get into the town square. You know, there's a few of us that have entered this arena, and we're just working folks that really, you know, up until a few years ago, going about our life like everybody else. But then when it did hit us and we started to look at the corruption and look at the foul nature of it, we said, no more. We can't accept this. And it never has left us because we are civic-minded citizens. We have taken our duty and hold it with such honor and respect that we can't release this. This is something we're not going to let go of.
You know, it's very interesting. I start, because of history being escaped, being erased, I started looking at some of our former presidents, and that's one of the wonderful things that you can do on the Internet. And I never realized how astute Calvin Coolidge was because nobody really ever talks to him.
Nope.
I wanted to read something that he said, which you can see it today. And he said, according to Calvin Coolidge, artificial propaganda, paid agitators, selfish interests, all infringe upon members of the legislative bodies to force them to represent special elements rather than the great body of their constituency. When they are successful, minority rule is established, which is what we have right now. The result is an extravagance on the part of the government, which is ruinous to the people, and a multiplicity of regulations and restrictions for the conduct of all kinds of necessary business, which becomes little less than oppressive. No plan of centralization has ever been adopted which did not result in bureaucracy, tyranny, inflexibility, reaction, and decline. All forms of government who administered by bureaus are about the least satisfactory to an enlightened and progressive people. They bring irresponsible and they become autocratic. Less bureaucracy is constantly resisted. Unless bureaucracy is constantly resisted, it breaks down the representative government and overwhelms democracy. It sets up the pretense of having authority over a body and everyone being responsible to nobody.
Wow. Where did you get that at?
I will be happy to send it to you.
Wow.
You can go online. I've been going online and looking for quotes. So I look up quotes of presidents because I want to see, you know, what were they experiencing? He was president in the 20s. What was he experiencing at that time? And for him to say this, this is exactly what we are experiencing today. And it is exactly for the same reason. So this, folks, is nothing new. Nothing new. Fighting for freedom is not a new cause. Fighting for freedom has been around for a very, very long time. And the people who are trying to take it away are truly evil. I can't describe them any other way. Did you know that our representatives went to Montreal in 2012 to a conference called Degrowth of the Americas? I could not believe that. I was shocked when I read that. And yet that is exactly where they went. And when they go to these places, what we really have to do is start looking at some of the things that they say and some of the things that they have done. One of the professor of population studies, this was Paul Ehrlich, he was part of the United Nations, said a massive campaign must be launched to de-develop the United States. De-development means bringing our economic system into line with the realities of ecology and the world's resource situation. These people are sick.
They're garbage.
They are sick, and we are following their policies.
Yeah.
That is even more incredible.
Well, and you know, when you just, Karen, you're so correct when you hear them start to talk about management of the resources, and every time when I hear resource, when I just hear the word resources, I cringe because I know that we put a valid policy for energy into the hands of every congressman and senator.
I remember.
And it was a valid. I heard from my own congressman and Senator Vitter that, you know, wow, there's a lot of thought went into this deal. This is something that could happen. And it never went anywhere. They're not going to. I did hear, and we both got to listen to some of the exact wording come out of some of them's mouths. you know, some from the conservative side of some efforts that they were going to take with regards to energy. But still in all, they have not done anything. You know, and when we gave them that plan, part of that plan was is that we, if they started on that day when we gave it to them, that in the fifth year, we would be close to being totally energy independent by the use of natural gas, fossil fuels, and coal. Just those three. And so they know it's possible, but why haven't they taken any action? You know, I debated a woman the other day because she said, well, we have such a surplus of energy. And I said, well, where did you get this from? And then when she could not relate to me where she got her talking point, I said, well, then it's obvious that you're ignorant to the true facts. You know, we have a government that when, you know, and I just asked her questions to check her education and to see whether she understood the truth. And I asked her how much energy does solar and wind provide. You know, when you're talking about doing away with natural resources and fossil fuels, what percentage of our energy comes from wind and solar? Well, she couldn't answer the question, so I shared with her, well, dear, right now we're approaching 4.5%, and we will be at 5%, but that's the total of everything that wind and solar does for this nation. And then I said, when do you think that we could do away with the use of crude oil and the need for crude oil? And she came back with her reply. She goes, well, we should be able to do it over a 10-year cycle. I said, well, sweetheart, we will never in our existence will we get rid of the need for crude oil in America. And I asked her, are you sitting on, what type of furniture are you sitting on? When you look around, is your laptop made out of wood, or do you have a plastic cover for your laptop that you're typing on? You know, are you aware that there's 645 products made from crude oil that you touch every single day of your life? When you go slide into your car and when you're puddling down the road and you're burning that gasoline, but everything in that car, have you ever thought about your tires, everything that comes from crude oil? And she stopped debating me. All of a sudden, she disappeared. She didn't want to, I had wrecked her day when I told her it wasn't possible to get rid of crude oil. It's changed resources. They're ours. They belong to us. They're not the federal government. And we need to reclaim that. We need to open up these great, huge national parks and let people that are, in my industry, we are environmentalists. We've had to deal with and have always operated on stronger spin. Our reactions to what happened on Macondo are a step and above of what the government requires. Because guess what we know? In this day and age, under this tyrant king, he's going to continue to tighten regulations. And when we meet one goal, he's going to make it harder, and he's going to put another goal on us. So we try to stay two steps ahead of them, and I think they're astounded at how far we've gone past what they required us to do. And that is, when you leave an industry alone, because my industry doesn't want to hurt anyone, we want to provide an independent source of energy to America. That's what I do. That's what the men in every time you see a guy on an oil rig, just recognize that he's not the guy in the thick carpet in New York City or Chicago or Houston, Texas. He's a guy that's from your community, and what he's doing is bringing you energy that you require without the need of foreign energy. We don't need it. We don't have to have it. We have an abundance, but they're not going to share that. They want to tell us, oh, no, we need to depopulate. BS. They're crazy. They're wackos.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And the fact that, you know, this is the other thing that gets me. This information, if I can find it, anybody can find it. Nobody ever looks to see who's behind these policies. What did the people say when they wrote this policy? What did they feel? What were the words put on the paper for? What was their environment around them to put this policy together? Christine Stewart, she was the former Canadian Minister of the Environment. And she said, no matter if the science of global warming is phony, climate change provides the greatest opportunity to bring about justice and equality in the world. They have no desire to tell the truth. This
no.
is not about telling the truth. This is not about anything other than stopping. Oh, here's another one. This is Professor Maurice King. Global sustainability requires the deliberate quest of poverty. Did you know you were on a deliberate quest for poverty? Reduced resource consumption and set levels of morality control.
What, I mean, I don't know. Golly, what do you do when we've got that? That's evil, huh? We're confronted with
evil. That is pure evil. There isn't anything decent about it. They are telling us in advance, we are going to make you poor. We are going to take away the luxuries that you enjoyed. We are going to control everything. We are, who the heck is we? And who cares who they are?
Yeah.
What right do they have to do this? And it's really a shame that the people don't read where their talking points are coming from. That's really, you know, it doesn't take much to investigate, but when you get an essay or a paper or you hear an announcement like we did the other day when Rick Scott announced about the American Research Center, the first thing we did was we went and looked up to see who is connected to the American Research Center.
There you go.
Why would we want to do that? Because we want to know the people behind the curtain. We don't want to take anything at face value anymore. We want to know what they are saying, what's motivating them, what's making them do what they are doing. And what we are finding, as you just said, John, is pure evil.
Uh-huh.
There isn't anything
Absolutely.
They tell you. We are going to make you poor. Here's another one. This was even like what Obama said. The only hope for the world is to make sure there is not another United States. We can't let other countries have the same number of cars, the same amount of industrialization we have in the U.S. We have to stop these third world countries right where they are. How dare you? How
well,
dare
I wonder
you
what China
say that?
Thinks of
that. And this is from the Environmental Defense Fund that we, the people, donate to. That's the sick part.
Yeah.
That's another thing that we have to be looking at is where is this money going? What organizations are getting our money and what do they stand for? But equally as important, who is behind the organization? What is their track record?
Yeah,
when
no
I
doubt.
Hear somebody say, you know, we have to have a deliberate quest of poverty, that blows my mind. And then you get the other idiots out there saying, oh, my goodness, the middle class is shrinking. Well, of course the middle class is shrinking. You're making it shrink.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, here's the invitation to come over the border. Oh, my goodness, people are coming over the border.
Yeah. Well, it's shocking.
It is. That's a good word to describe it. It's absolutely shocking. And it's shocking that this stuff is out there for people to look at. And they go to Washington or to the state capitol or they sit in office and they pretend like nothing is happening and everything is okay. And as Obama said, oh, I'm surprised. I didn't know that was going to be a crisis. I learned about it on the news just like you. BS. Read what their people are writing. They're telling you what we are doing. This is another one. This is Judy Barry. She's the organizer of Earth First. You've heard of that one.
Yep.
And she said, if we don't overthrow capitalism, we won't have a chance of saving the world ecologically. I think it will be possible to have an ecologically sound society under socialism. I don't think it will be possible under capitalism, so therefore we must practice socialism.
So now there's a person that's not hiding.
No.
She's telling you just what her evil intent is, and guess what? She's not alone. So then when they tell everyone, look, that John and Karen, when they speak on that American Freedom Watch radio, when they come out and they start telling people, look, we're sharing with you the truth, and they then are going to turn around and say, well, no, they're not very fact-based, and no, they've got some tinfoil hats on. You know, there's no conspiracy. There's no underlying conspiracy. BS. BS. Miss Berry just told you exactly what her and her organization are about. And the sad thing is, it's just one of hundreds of organizations around the world are working towards the same goal.
And that goal is to de-develop the United States. Level the playing field by bringing us down into a third world country. So just think, if there's money to be made, if a pot of money has $101 bills in it, that's the whole pot. Okay? If somebody takes $95, there's only $5 left. And that $5 gets split up between millions of people. When only a few stick their fingers in the cookie jar and walk away with the hundreds of dollars. And that's what we have going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and then, you know, the desire, the end to capitalism, because it won't accomplish their mission, but socialism will.
That's right.
And when you and I scream, look, we're becoming more and more socialist each and every day. Liberty and freedom is being taken away from you. This has become a socialist nation. And people say, well, no, John, we're free. We've got a great democracy. Well, wait a while. What's your understanding of democracy and what it leads to? Yeah. But here's the fact that these people openly state, we've got to destroy capitalism. We can't allow nations to work under a capitalism. It's not going to happen. We're going to need socialist government in place around the globe, because they're not just working. America is the painted around the globe as the number one evil. Wherever you go, everyone will scream and cry to you, what's going on in America? Why do you hate us? Why are you destroying your dollar? Why are you allowing the destruction of the dollar? Do you not know what you're doing to us? Do you really hate us that much? And that's a conversation that I have with a guy standing out in front of the hill waiting to get me a cab, you know. and he was adamant that, you know, that we hate. I said, no, Americans don't hate you. We have people inside of our government that are foul and corrupt, that are bringing this destruction of the U.S. dollar to South Africa. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you that we don't have, but I will share with you this. There are those of us in America who are making an effort, and you may not see it, and you may not hear it in South Africa today, but we're making inroads. We are going to stand up to this. We know it's evil, and we're doing something about it. And that's all you can say, you know. But, I mean, it's, you know, they feel it. Around the globe, everyone feels the destruction of our wealth, you know, and everyone says, well, the redistribution, where is the redistribution taking place?
That's a real good question. If wealth was being redistributed to third world countries, wouldn't you think they would have no poverty and no hunger and no disease?
For the last five years,
they've been getting all of our money, or have they?
Well, that's exactly right. Have they? You know, who got the money in Brazil? Who got the money in Mexico? Who got the money in South Africa and Africa? And when I get over to Malaysia and I look at Koreans are doing pretty good, South Korea, because they've got a manufacturing base that used to belong to America. They've got a shipbuilding industry that used to belong to America. They're manufacturing cars that used to be done in America. So they're doing okay, huh? So some of that wealth has been redistributed to them. But that's by design of the United Nations, because they're fully compliant with the United Nations Agenda 21. They openly admit it. They're proud of it. But then when you get to the other nations, what's happening in Brazil right now? Yeah, they got the world stuff going on, but are they showing you the riots in the poverty-driven areas of Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo? No, they're not. They're hiding it. Why? Because there's no wealth being redistributed there. We've sent billions of dollars to improve their drilling industry, and we know that that's happening. That's taking place. But where does that money go? Where does Petrobras, when they get a $2 billion loan from Barack Obama, where did that money go? How many Brazilian people saw that $2 billion? Where's the answer? The answer is it never gets down to the people. It's just
never,
like an American. You're pumping $45 billion a month into the American economy. When did you get your last check from them, folks? When did anyone from the Federal Reserve or the United States government say, look, we've pumped in $1.4 trillion into the American economy over the last couple of years, and you should have received your check? No, I didn't get it.
I didn't get it, John.
No, in fact, you're taking more of my wealth and telling me I'm not doing enough. You're telling the poor people that I'm the evil guy, you know. You're telling the poor folks and the people on the very bottom of the spectrum who are ignorant enough to listen to you that I'm the evil that they must confront, that I'm the bad guy that does not want to see them prosper. Well, I say the Federal Reserve bankers, the United Nations, this administration are the evil people. When they want to pump stimulus money into the economy, hand it down to those people. I'd be fine if they'd give the $45 billion to every welfare recipient. Because guess what I know? It would stimulate the economy. You know,
and
they
would
buy
things. We would have to pay for them over and over again. You're right.
Exactly.
I agree with you. What is it, 300 million people in America? They could have given every American $1 million.
Yeah, when you look at the lie, and it is a lie, they could care less about the poor. Barack Obama is not going to go spend the night in any welfare district in America. He's not going to do it because guess what? They know he has not helped them. They may get out and glad hand him and the people that are, you know, listening to the ignorance and the talking points because he's going to go tell them, I'm working on it. I'm going to try to get this straight. It's that evil government.
Oh, I'm so upset. What does he say? I'm outraged. I'm mad as hell. We must have an investigation.
Yeah.
That's
Well, where's his mad as hell when it comes time to say, look, Fed, instead of pumping that $45 billion into Wall Street, we're going to take that $45 billion this month and we're going to hand it out to every welfare recipient. Where is that? Where's that Barack Obama? Where's that logic? If you want to stimulate a capitalist society, you start to improve the poor class. You know, and don't think that the trillions of dollars that have been handed out, trillions of dollars that have been handed out to these companies, these corporations for their bailouts, could not have reached down to the poor if they would have been given to the poor. It's a simple deal that we know they can accomplish through their rogue Gestapo agency. The Internal Revenue Service has full capability of printing and sending checks. Where are the checks, folks? If you're stimulating the U.S. economy, give it to the people. Where's the people's share? Guess what? We get no share of this pie. They want more from us in taxation. They want to separate us and divide us and have every citizen split against another citizen, whether it's on ideological lines, whether it's on race lines, whether it's on economic lines. They want to keep us divided. They don't want us to share the truth that if I want to stimulate the American economy, pump $1 trillion into the hands of the poor. Do that. Let's see that, Mr. Obama, and let's see how well that works. Trust me, that would be true stimulus.
You're right. You know, the other thing people also should understand is that all of these people, when they get off of their talking points, they're all buddies.
Yep.
So they're all creating this plan together.
Yep.
I happened to be watching last week they had a tribute to George Bush, 41. He was 90 years old. He jumped out of a plane, whoopee-doo.
Yeah.
I wasn't watching the show, but I happened to be flipping the channels, and I came to the segment where Bill Clinton was talking about how wonderful George Bush was, and how he, Bill Clinton, was really a member of the Bush family, and they considered him the black sheep son of the Bush family. So, folks, don't think that all of this stuff is a bunch of garbage. They do this in front of the camera, and then camera is off. They go out, they hang together, they pal together, and they plan. How can we fleece the American people? Remember, never forget, we gave $3 billion, with a B, dollars, not federal dollars, but collected from hardworking people to go to the people of Haiti. And it was given to Bush and Clinton. And guess where it never got?
Yeah. All I can
you
tell you
the
is
pictures
second plane
of
ride
to
Haiti.
Still living in their tents.
That's exactly right. Tent cities. That's exactly right. And that's a fact. I mean, that if you want to, and see, they know the American people aren't going to go visit Haiti to see the lie, the fact that this money was collected, and Americans always have contributed to every disaster around the globe. Americans reach deep, and we contribute, and we send money. But the money never reaches the people. It's just like in this nation. When you talk $17 trillion of debt, and under Barack Obama, where's he at? $10 trillion. Where's the money? How come we haven't, you know? And I'm telling you, take one single trillion. If we're going to be in this debt, okay, no more stimulus to Wall Street. The next trillion you give, when you're going to pump $45 billion Federal Reserve, we want it sent to the IRS so that they can distribute it to every welfare recipient in America. Do that one time. Just do that and let's see that. Because here's the fact. You want to stimulate the economy? That's how you do it. And they know that. I'm just a country bumpkin. And I know if you really want to stimulate a capitalist economy, you put the money in the hands of the people. And guess what the people are going to do with it? They're going to spend it. They're going to buy products. They might even open a business and manufacture products. You know, that's how you build wealth. That's how this nation was built. Why aren't they doing that? Why are they sending the money to foreign banks? Because they could care less about the people. These are evil people with an evil intent and evil design for the American people that's coming. It's on the way. We can't tell you the date. I don't know the day that it's going to happen, but as sure as I'm sitting right here, hyperinflation is going to take place, and when it does, let's see what happens to the poor then. You know, let's see how large the poor become. Let's see if John and Karen can survive, or we'll be right in the same bread line, and that's really what they want. They want everyone reliant on the government for all things. Everything will be handed out and distributed through the collective, the government, and the proletariat will manage it. Well, who are the proletariat in the United States of America? Congress.
That's right.
Why are they fighting us so hard to keep their little seats? Because they know
they know if they're not working for the government, they're going to be joining the bread line with the po-folks.
Exactly. And what do you think I'd do to Harry Reid if Harry Reid was in a bread line with me in Louisiana?
Oh, I'd step on his head if it was me.
And they know that, too. That's why they never come.
Wait a minute, John.
That's why Mary Landrieu never comes to Louisiana.
Yeah. I just forgot. Nancy Pelosi said that we had to extend the unemployment benefits because that was stimulating the economy?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me explain that to folks so that they get a real clear understanding of that. Number one, Nancy Pelosi and the federal government do not make money. They have no means of making money. The only money they can distribute, whether it's unemployment, welfare, or food stamps, is money that they take from you and I in taxes, money that they steal from us to create these social programs. You and I pay for them, and then Nancy Pelosi says it stimulates the economy, taking my money from me to give to another American citizen who's not working and who may not even be looking for a job because it's more beneficial for them. They figured out the system and they're in the system now. They've been in it so long that they're not even looking for work, and we need to extend what I give to them. not Nancy Pelosi and the government, what John, Karen, and every working citizen gives and is stolen from us by these crooks.
So right. So right. And guess what? We forgot to do a station break. And I apologize, folks. We were on a roll, John. It's almost time to say goodbye. I can't believe it.
Well, it goes fast.
How do you like that? My goodness, time flies.
Yeah, Sally and I were talking earlier, and she said she really didn't have anything to rant about. I started laughing. I said, well, wait a while. Karen and I will have plenty of that for you.
Oh, my gosh.
A few minutes.
Well, what yeah. is it they said? You cannot make a poor man rich by making a rich man poor.
There you go. Exactly.
It
exactly.
does not work.
Yeah. That's the only redistribution that's taking place for sure is they're taking the money from the American people and they're redistributing it amongst their buddies.
That's exactly it. That is exactly what this economy is. It's
mm-hmm.
taking it from your pocket and putting it into somebody else's pocket. Only
well,
that
there.
Pocket is not a poor person. That pocket is sitting in Washington, the community of the wealthy, of the
yeah.
uber. And
yeah.
that's the part, we know that. That's the part that taking back doesn't mean storming the hill. Taking back okay. means going into your community and sitting with the community people and saying what works, what doesn't work, and what's funded by us and what's funded by the federal government, and get rid of the things that are funded by the federal government because they come with strings and they are designed, as we just learned, not to work because the goal and purpose is to de-develop the United States. So
that's
if you buy into that, then do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be de-developed,
yeah, don't
nothing.
Vote. Don't register to vote.
Nope.
Because
don't do anything.
You can accept what's coming if that's what your choice is.
That's right. If you don't want to de-develop, then you better sit with your leaders, become a leader, and start being square with your community because
yep.
this is going to be ugly. And it's going to wind up falling back on the individual community because that's the only place where people are going to be able to survive. We're not going to – I mean, we let one of these turkeys in from crossing the border. Today there was an incident on the border where they tried to blow up an electric plant. Well, folks, that's another issue. Here
wow.
we have them figuring out all kinds of ways that they can steal from us when what could be the one actual thing that they could have done that would have made sense? Protect the electric grid. What are
yeah.
we going to do if there's no electric? If one of these guys gets through with his bombs, which they have, they're coming across the border fully armed. So they go to a power plant, they take down a power plant, and the morons who connected all of the grids, that was a real stupid thing to do.
yeah.
Because if one grid goes down, they all go down.
Yeah.
The grids
and
should
I know
be
it.
Separated. Each state should be separated with its own grid for protection.
Yep.
Doesn't mean we don't love other states. It means if Florida goes dark, well, Georgia still is working.
That's
Louisiana
it.
Still has their lights on.
Yep.
If we're all connected and somebody blows up a power plant in Texas, we could all go down. But I think Texas is the only state that was smart and does have its own power grid.
Well, they got a railroad commission that kind of regulated that and told them, no, we're not doing it.
yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I intend to bring up when I get elected. Every state should be redundant within its state. Every
sure.
state.
Yeah.
And
yeah, because I mean, we all, you know, how the hell is it
heard? We can turn them back up.
Yeah. I have heard many the military strategists and the talking heads on Fox, and I've even seen a couple on CNN, and they talk about that possibility, you know. And when you start to hear generals and retired generals start talking about what would it look like if there was an EMP attack, an electrical pulse magnetic field deal that you could launch from interior of the Gulf of Mexico over the top of the United States of America and turn off the lights on the country. Now, these guys are able to talk about that, and they've given thought to it, and it frightens them. Why aren't we frightened? Why aren't we demanding that, no, we don't want to be all interconnected to where if one goes down, we all go down? That's not a very logical thing, and especially, you know, the Department of Homeland Security. Let's protect the homeland. That means let's keep the lights on. And every state, that's not a bad design, Karen. When something happens catastrophic and one, we could rush to their aid if it's just one.
That's right.
But if it's all, it'll be so much helter-skelter. And I don't know how many times you and I have lived through hurricanes, and we see what that devastation brings, but the one thing that we all know, and I have seen it so many times on Interstate 10, that if there's an issue in Florida, the trucks from Louisiana, the trucks from Texas, Oklahoma, all over the United States of America, all of the utility companies send their best and their brightest workers to the aid of that state to assist it, because guess what they know? If they leave that state down, it creates such a burden on the rest of the grid that people's lights might start to flicker. So, you know, there's a reason that they've interconnected themselves, you know, but there's also a great reason not to be that interwoven, because, you know, the damage could be catastrophic to every American, not just one single state. So
I was watching a show on the grid, and they said that within the first 72 hours, if there was a total blackout, almost 50% of the population would be wiped out because of medication. I never thought of that. I was focused on food and water.
Yeah.
I never thought about the part of the people who rely on medication.
Dialysis.
But if the entire country goes down, there's no medication.
Well, I was just listening this morning, and they were talking about the increase in diabetes across the United States of America. Well, what does a person that's a diabetic and requires kidney dialysis, and if there's no power, what happens to that person?
A catastrophic loss. Catastrophic loss.
Yeah.
And it's time that we grow up like real good boys and girls and pay attention to the world around us and what's going on. And our enemies are here today, compliments of our inept government. They are here, and they are ready to do harm. And if we haven't learned in the past that when some ISIS or Al-Qaeda dude says, I'm going to blow up something in America, that they don't mean it, then shame on us.
Well, and then I'll tell you my big fear, Karen, is, you know, in Benghazi, the investigation, if they don't do anything else, perhaps they will uncover and reveal that this president and his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton at the time, gave truckloads of Stinger missiles and shoulder-launched missiles to in Syria, in Libya, in every little conflict area, you know, well, we're going to overthrow Gaddafi. Well, how did that work out for you when the Stinger missile was launched into the embassy in Benghazi? But how many of those Stinger missiles are making it across the border into America?
You know, you're absolutely right, John. And on that note, we have run out of time.
It
is time to say goodbye. What a shame. I'm enjoying this conversation so much.
Yeah,
I hope
been
everybody
great.
Else is also. And I hope you've learned and share this information with others. John, it has been a pleasure as always. Sally, yep, a pleasure as always. Folks, you're listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and on Red State Talk Radio. Please visit our website, agenda21today.com, americaismyname.org, saveamericafoundation.com, karenshone.com, and votekarenshone.com. And so, my friends, it is time for us to say goodnight, and we will see you again next Tuesday, which is a big election day in Mississippi. So power up, everyone, and let's get cracking and get the right people in office so we can do the right thing. God bless you all, and God bless America. Good night.
Yeah, God bless America.
John.
Yeah, good night, Karen. Thank you. God bless you, Sally.
God bless
you,
Sally.
God bless.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.